Playoff time in the NBA and NHL. Baseball's in full swing, and FanDuel is your place to bet on every game. Right now, new customers get $150 in bonus bets guaranteed. That's $150, win or lose. Bet on everything from slap shots to home runs to slam dunks on an app that's safe, secure, and easy to use. What are you waiting for? Visit FanDuel.com/Fred and make your first bet an automatic win. FanDuel, America's number one sports book.
21 plus and present in Massachusetts. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Hope is here. Gambling helpline ma.org or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support. Play it smart from the start. GameSenseMA.com or call 1-800-GAM-1234.
If you really love hockey, this is your show.
They score!
The Shaws and Star Market Hockey Show on 98.5, The Sports Hub.
The Sports back here on hour number two of the Shaws and Star Market Hockey Show. Ryan Johnston, Judd Surratt, Bob Beers coming to you from our Town Fair Tire Studios in Dorchester. 617-779-0985, the number if you would like to join us this morning. We've been talking a lot about last night's game and the series as a whole as it has developed so far. Bruins down 2-1 with game four coming up tomorrow afternoon. Kind of looking at the series as a whole through the first three games, is it what you expected? Has Carolina been better, been as good as expected? Have the Bruins been better, as good, worse than expected to this point?
Kind of a broad question. I think Carolina's been as advertised. I think that they're a pretty deep team. They use their speed, they pressure. They force you into mistakes maybe in that on their forecheck. It's been a wild card in net. We don't know what's going on there. I think that they've been as advertised. From the Bruins standpoint, it was a matter of, when are they going to break out? When are they going to be able to score here? And can they score against this team? Because they hadn't. They didn't. And I know the regular season games, I don't put much stock in them normally because you're at different points of the season. But they had one goal in the three games against them. So, now you're playing this team every other night. Can you break out? Can you get through? And now they've got, 6 goals in the last 2 games? Good sign. I got to keep it up. 2 power play goals, that's huge. Power play struggled down the stretch. That was a big question mark coming in. Guys that needed to get on the board got on the board. So, I'm cautiously optimistic encouraged by what happened last night, not just the W itself, not just the win itself, but who gets on the board and, you start feeling a little bit better about yourself and you're not squeezing the stick maybe as tight.
I don't think there have been any surprises necessarily in the series. And it's funny because I think back to, I think it was 2019 in that conference final series, the Bruins sweep the Carolina Hurricanes. But if you remember the talk heading into game four, it was, we haven't seen any goals from the top line. I think it took Marchand, Bergeron, Pastrnak a little while to convert in that series. And I think Rod Brind'Amour's fear was, the longer we go, the greater chance that that is going to happen. You want those guys to get involved, and the longer a series goes, the greater the chance that it is. I think it's a good sign for the Bruins that those guys got on the sheet last night, and they got on the sheet as well on the man advantage. One of the differences, and the Hurricanes have talked about it, that they were ousted in 2019 and 2020 because too many penalties, and the Bruins' power play took over.
And not only that, but they're asked the question, so they answered it. And paraphrasing, there was a number of quotes, and it was put up on their telecast when we were down there, and it was Rod Brind'Amour, Sebastian Aho, saying that the motivation of being knocked out of the playoffs by the Bruins a couple times here recently is definitely motivation to get the job done now.
What's the chink in the armor for Carolina?
The goalie.
It's
the goalie. You know, Freddie Anderson, you know, he was a Vezina candidate. The way he played and the few breakdowns they had, he was able to clean up. He had a marvelous season. He's not in the lineup right now. And while Peter Kochetkov has certainly, you know, shown some signs of being a really talented goaltender, at the same time, this is his first Stanley Cup playoff experience. He played almost the entire year in the American Hockey League with the Chicago Wolves. This is your third goaltender in the system. Listen, if they thought that he was better than Antti Raanta, he'd have been backing up. But he's not, you know, at least during the regular season. So you're down to your third goaltender. That's the issue. And listen, I think the longer the series goes, I think the greater chance you're going to see why he was third on the depth chart, and a guy that is still as talented as he may be and as good as he may be, he may become, that I think the sample size is going to show he's not ready yet.
Yeah, and experience in the NHL, right? I mean, he's played in the KHL, he's played in the AHL, but, you know, get dropped in the NHL playoffs with very little experience at this level.
Amazing, last night you had two goaltenders making their first NHL start in the playoffs. I mean, Raanta's actually, his start in game one, that was his first start. But Swayman and Kochetkov, both their first starts.
All right, let's get back to your calls. We got Gino up next here on the Shaws and Star Market Hockey Show. Good morning, Gino.
Good morning, gentlemen. How are we doing today?
Morning.
Good.
Beersy, been listening to you for years. Just want to shout out all three of you. Great job on the broadcasts.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah, no problem. So anyway, couple points real quick. I was encouraged last night, too. Forsberg, oh, man, what an animal he was, shot blocking. You think that's sustainable in this D-Corps? Anyone else can step up and do that? Because I think if anyone can do is even close to what Forsberg does, like, you know, once a game, we're going to have some success, I think, too, even with our D-Corps banged up, because that's just huge. And my second point real quick, I agree with you guys about Carolina's goalie situation. That's an underrated story. Their third-string goaltender, and if I'm the Bruins, I'm licking my chops right now, because – I was about as down as anyone else was after these first couple games, because I did not like what I saw at all in Carolina. Awful to what happened to Lindholm. But game three, that was a nice sight to see. So just want to take your thoughts on that. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks,
guys.
Gino.
Appreciate it.
Well, Ryan, a couple things come to mind. We had the conversation with Aaron Ward before the series started. And you know, while we have talked about special teams in the past has been part of their undoing, what did Aaron Ward talk about? That they didn't have the necessary goaltending to be able to beat a team like the Bruins across a seven-game series. So here you are. You don't have Freddie Anderson. Antti Raanta is out, and who knows when he's going to get back in, even though he was backing up last night. So you're on to your third goaltender. As far as Derek Forsberg, I think it's in the Bruins' DNA to deny the middle, to protect the slot. You know, maybe he's shown it, you know, to a much greater degree because it was the playoffs and with the nine blocks. But the Bruins, as we've talked about how good Carolina is defensively, the Bruins were not far behind them. Carolina was first defensively. The Bruins were fourth. Allowing shots, Carolina first, allowing only 28 per game. The Bruins third, allowing 29 per game. It's in their DNA to play like that.
Yeah, I expect, I mean, just to add to that, I mean, so you get that many shots blocked from the right wing circle, you know, where's the adjustment by Carolina? And you know, certainly there will be. They switched up a couple of players, whether it was by chance or whether they did it, you know, on purpose. But, you know, it had been Teravainen over there on that right wing circle. Then eventually it ended up being Svechnikov over there as the game wore on. And then, you know, they moved Teravainen to the other side. So what adjustments do they make in that situation in terms of, you know, getting shots through? You know, do they have to make a major adjustment, or do they just have to do a better job? I think from the Bruins standpoint, the you know, they took five again last night, penalties, some warranted, some not. You know, I get that, but that's going to be the case every game. And, you know, one of the caller made it, the comment of, you know, that more encouraged last night. So last night was timely. And it was timely in the Bruins' favor in the sense that you're shorthanded, you're trailing 1-0. We went over this earlier in the show, and you get the shorthanded goal, the timely goal. You get the timely save. And then eventually they get the lead in the second period on the goal by Marchand. And then they add to it, you know, another timely goal to add to it with the power play goal by Pastrnak. In game one, you know, you get a great chance down one end, and Ranta makes the save. You referenced it earlier. Next thing you know, Carolina's putting the puck in at the other end, and you're trailing. And you've had some great opportunities. You controlled the play the whole first 10 minutes of the game, and now you find yourself trailing, right? So, you know, then Taylor Hall makes it 2-1. Then he hits the post right after that. You know, that's 2-2, but instead they get a 2-on-1 going back down the other way, and they convert, and now it's 3-1. You know, so the timeliness of the goals, I think, goes a long way in some of this, and that's the margin for error is pretty slim. And you got to take advantage when you have the opportunities, and that's what the Bruins did yesterday.
From Forbert's name has come up a lot, obviously, this morning because of the game that he had last night, but we really haven't talked about the impact of missing Hampus Lindholm for potentially an extended period of time. We don't really know what his status is going to be going forward, and this was the guy that was brought in over and above anybody else at the trade deadline for this time of year, and then on, you know, for many years, hopefully in the future. But to lose him this early in the playoffs puts a big strain on your defense, because we know how difficult it is to keep those guys healthy.
Yeah, I thought Riley came in and did a good job yesterday. I thought he was good. He played alongside McAvoy a lot. You know, he can skate, he can move the puck, and you know, sometimes, you know, I don't know if he forgets that or whatever. I don't want to, you know, I don't. He needs to do that consistently. And, you know, he's not, I wouldn't say he's an overly physical guy, but, you know, he can get involved that way when he needs to. And you need to in a series, in a 7-game series, in a playoffs. You know, you need to have that ability to do that. So, I like I said, I thought Riley might have been going in the lineup either way. Mm. You know, as a possibility for this game 3, but because of the injury, definitely in there on that side. And I think he did a really good job last night.
I thought Matt Grzelcyk had a better game in game 3 than he did in the first two. I thought he was better than we saw in those first two games. You know, the other thing I think about is, listen, it's huge that Hampus Lindholm is not in your lineup. But that said, this is the decor that allowed you to surge in the second half. This was the group. Whatever you may think, you know, after January 1st and up until the end of the regular season, and the Bruins played 56 games, but they had the fourth best winning percentage. That winning percentage was better than any in the Atlantic Division, and the Atlantic Division was second only to Florida. So these were the top four teams. It was Florida, Colorado, the Bruins, and Carolina, or Calgary down the stretch, not Carolina. So this was the group that led you to that record. So they're capable. They have to just continue to do it as this series progresses.
Joe is in Vermont this morning. Good morning, Joe.
Hey, morning, boys. Nice to hear you, Mr. Beers. I think it's four goalies that have made their debut, because Olmark didn't start in the playoffs for Buffalo, did he?
Correct.
Oh, you're right. Correct. Yeah. Right.
So yeah. You can add that.
There was two rookies last night.
Right.
Yeah, but also Allmark started at I can't remember the Carolina goalie that started. He got hurt. But Ranta. I think that was his first game.
Yeah,
and
four guys who have played their first NHL playoff game in the
I guess
series.
I was referring to the rookie.
His first start.
Yeah, Swayman appeared
last year, but this was his first start.
Yeah, same for Ranta.
So, you know, to me last night, the hitting was a little more consistent. And obviously to get Pasta to pop a power play goal is huge. The win, like, I don't think anybody in Boston would say we don't, like, we need the last night and the next game if we want a shot. Like, we just do. But I got a couple of concerns. Like, Brad Marchand's comment about, yeah, I was more engaged this game. That's kind of concerning for obvious reasons, because, like, you need that little ball of hate. That guy's our motor. Like, and my argument is he was the MVP during that run that you were talking about. So, but one thing I saw last night with the power play that concerned me was on the 5-on-3, it looked like they just, like, it was almost like basketball. Like, they went to their position and stayed there, like almost like a Lightning setting up for a Stamkos one-timer. I get a little nervous. I feel like they should move their skates more. And you know, Pasta is like an elite shooter, but you can't just rely on bread all day. You need like, you know, you need the mayonnaise, you need the meat, you need the other parts of the sandwich for a sandwich. And my last point is I really feel like Jeremy Swayman plays better under pressure. What I considered was when he started slipping, maybe it was the I am the man mentality, but when it's like, no, kid, we need you here today, right now, let's go. Like that, in the second period, he made an amazing rebound save with the right pad that like really kept us in the game. And the kid showed me something last night. So I'd love to hear your thoughts on these boys, right. And I'll catch you next
Thanks,
week,
Joe.
Hopefully.
All right.
Agree with the Swayman thing. Yeah, I agree with that. The power play. Yeah. And we interviewed Marchand after the second period and asked him about the power play, you know, the 5-on-3. And he says, yeah, we haven't had a 5-on-3 in a long time. He said, and we were definitely rusty. And yeah, they were stationary. There's no question. And you know, Pasternak got a couple shots blocked in that circle. But the one positive that they had with it is that they retrieved pucks. They did not allow Carolina up off the mat. They didn't allow those three guys that were out there for the entire penalty kill, stuck in their own zone, to be able to clear the puck and get off the ice on a line change and get fresh bodies out there. And I think they actually lost the faceoff, but got to the puck and was able to keep it in. You know, it was like a 50-50 puck, because even though they lost the faceoff, it might have been Hall that got to it. I can't remember, but in the corner. And they keep possession of it, and they wore them down, you know, and eventually they got rewarded for it, and it ended up being a 5-on-4. But, yeah, there's no – I think that they were a little bit stationary. I you know, if one thing isn't working, maybe try a little something different. You know? And Pasternak's really good when he gets moving to different spots, and you know, then now they're not sure where he's going to be. So, sure, that's if you're kind of nitpicking a little bit, they got the job done on the 5-on-4. So, you know, maybe they'll get a couple more 5-on-3s, you know, like Carolina did in game two.
And that was a stellar pass, by the way, Brad Marchand, throwing it across the box. That was a play that hasn't been available in the past. Against this Carolina team, the number one penalty killing unit in the National Hockey League during the regular season. That was a fabulous pass across for David Pasternak to finish. The Bruins, by the way, won 6 of the 8 faceoffs on the power play, which, listen, possession is huge. And I think Bruce Cassidy had mentioned heading into game three, he's like, I think our power play is starting to get closer. We're starting to see a little bit more of a look that we're accustomed to. Bergeron had scored in game two on the man advantage. So some of the plays that they're used to, some of that mojo was coming back.
And the possession off the faceoffs is big, because, you know, you're starting in the offensive zone, first of all, but you need help from the wingers and the guys that are lined up on the circle. Like, if it's a 50-50 puck, you need to win that and, you know, be able to tap it back and be able to set up now. You know, if you don't win that and it's well executed by the defensive team, you're going 200 feet. You're going to have to go back, get it, and set up again. So, you know, I think that's key, the help from the wingers and the help from the forwards, you know, whether it's Bergeron or whoever's taking the faceoff, to be able to help out there and try to get to some of those pucks. And if you lose the draw, to be jumping and getting and forcing them, not giving them an easy clear.
You were talking about timely goals earlier, and since we're talking about faceoffs, and this is the small things in the game, but the Bruins won 6 of the 8 power play faceoffs. They won 6 of the 9 shorthanded draws as well.
All right, we'll get to more of your calls. 617-779-0985. Billy Jaffe coming up in about 15 minutes as well, as we continue on the Shaws and Star Market Hockey Show.
It's playoff time in the NBA and NHL. Baseball's in full swing, and FanDuel is your place to bet on every game. Right now, brand new customers get $150 in bonus bets guaranteed. $150, win or lose. Bet on everything from slap shots to home runs to slam dunks, and all on an app that's safe, secure, and easy to use. I don't know what you're waiting for. Go to FanDuel.com/Hardy. Make your first bet an automatic win with FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook.
21 plus and present in Massachusetts. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Hope is here. Gambling helpline ma.org or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support. Play it smart from the start. GameSenseMA.com or call 1-800-GAM-1234.
That's all hockey. The Shaw's and Star Market Hockey Show. 98.5, The Sports Hub.
All right, back here on the Shaw's and Star Market Hockey Show, Ryan Johnston, Judd Surratt, Bob Beers. Your calls as well, 617-779-0985.
Yeah, so one thing we haven't really touched on today is matchups and being on home ice and having the last change and the ability to have the matchups. Game one, Bergeron and Staal. Bergeron took 19 faceoffs against Jordan Staal in game one. Game three, four. Four faceoffs against Staal. That's, you know, that was, he took, you know, faceoffs against a number of different guys. But that line, you know, he only took four faceoffs. Now he got kicked out a few times. I know that. So, which may be something that Carolina is asking the referees about.
Echoes of Mike Babcock.
Yeah, exactly. But the ability to have the last change, have the matchup that you want, and dictate that matchup, I think helped in certain ways yesterday.
All right, let's get to your calls. Try and get to your point as quickly as we can so we can get a few of them in here before we go to Billy Jaffe. We've got Ricky in Winchester up first. Hey, Ricky.
Hey, good morning, guys. I'm usually a caller at 2 to 6, so this is a little new to me. So last night, I think things kind of just turned on their head. Their pucks started not going in. Our pucks started to fall. Power play or penalty kill showed up. I wanted to bring up just I don't know if you guys are into the like advanced analytics stuff, but the Bruins out of the 16 playoff teams right now ranked fourth in five on five expected goals for percentage. So that makes Carolina ranked 13th at 59-41%. So I think the proof's in the pudding that the Bruins were getting chances early on in the series, and now last night they still were. They can hang with this team. I think they were just making mistakes in the first two games. So, you know, I think, you know, we got a good shot, and I just want to let you have one more question, what you guys think of the matchup. You guys just started mentioning it, putting Bergeron against Aho. I was a little surprised at first, but it seemed to work out. So thanks, guys.
I appreciate it. You know, again, the analytics are fine for the front office guys to, you know, to go through all that stuff.
The good
ultimately,
nerds.
Ultimately,
as Bruce Cassidy calls them, the good nerds. We have good nerds.
Ultimately, you know, expected chances are great, but you have to cash them in.
Yeah, and that goes to the inside, right? There was some rebounds that were just out of guys' reaches, and you know, you hope that the hockey gods kind of even things out a little bit, and some of those rebound chances end up on the stick, and you're able to bury them. Look, they've had a couple of tip-in goals. You look around the league, you see a lot of tip-in goals around the league. So trying to get some of the greasy ones, that's what the Bruins are trying to create right now, because Carolina's certainly had their share.
Nick is in Georgetown. You're up next on the Shaw's and Star Market Hockey Show.
Hey, boys, how are we doing? Thanks for taking the call.
Morning. Sure.
I actually just wanted to touch on the power play a little bit. I mean, I know we got a couple goals last night, able to produce a little bit, but man, it seems like we're having a hard time getting into the zone. And, you know, that's been pretty consistent throughout. What do you guys think, you know, what's a better way for us to get in there? You know, we chip in, they get it right out, try and, you know, dribble it or, you know, put stick handle into the zone. And, you know, it just seems like they're really packing that blue line. What do you guys think we can do to kind of, you know, get in a little easier, get some momentum?
They made major change, especially yesterday. I mean, how many dump-ins did we see yesterday?
Mm-hmm. A lot.
You know, where they weren't trying to – there were times where you can carry – and certainly if you can carry the puck in, you want to do that, you know, because you just keep possession. And it takes away an extra step where you have to go back and get possession. But, you know, if they were effective at taking that away, then the Bruins – I mean, they dumped the puck in several times last night. Now – where do you dump it? Do you have the ability to get there as the puck is dumped in? You know, Carolina's leaving that one defenseman kind of a little deeper, you know, trying to stack the blue line, but you've got one guy that's anticipating that and trying to get back on it. You know, so can they get pucks back when they do dump it in? And that's kind of still a work in progress, I think. And they were successful a few times yesterday, just the eye test. They have no analytics on it, but they were successful a few times on it, unsuccessful a few times on it, and getting to some of those pucks after they dumped it in. You get some momentum, but you also have one or two guys that are standing, at least one guy, and that's usually Bergeron, standing still at the blue line. He's kind of the stretch guy. He's a safety valve if you're coming up the ice, and you can move that puck over to him on the right wing where he's stationed, and then he can do the soft chip, and you continue on to go get the puck. If they're taking that away, then maybe you can weave your way in. If that's taken away, you're dumping it in. But Bergeron's not going to be first on the forecheck because he's standing still. It's the other guys that are going. And if you've got two guys on one side, you want to make sure the puck gets over there so that they can get to it first if they have that momentum getting into the zone. I mean, it's kind of a simple way of putting it, but put the puck where you can get it back if you're going to dump it in.
And then, you know, and then the second thing is, okay, once you get it back, now you got to try and set up.
Yes.
And they're so fast, and it is so hard.
Yeah, they pressure, but their pressure hurt them on the Hoggle.
It did.
Yeah, and the Bruins made a good play to get that puck down. Now it's a 2-on-1 in front of the net.
That was, I think it was Pastrnak who passed it by Brady Shea, who was unable to get Marchand's cross-ice pass to David Pastrnak in the second period when the Bruins scored on the man advantage. So I think...
That's what happens when you're out there for almost 2 minutes inside your own zone, chasing the puck around.
But this is one of the things that we had, you know, that I think we had talked about heading into the series, and the coaching staff talked about it. If you can execute, if you can move that puck quickly, there will be some openings. It's not easy to do.
Jake, you're up next on the Shaws and Star Market Hockey Show.
Hey, guys. You know, I certainly was concerned going into the last game of the Bruins putting together the old top line because I thought Taylor Hall was the best forward in the first two games, and I was worried that taking away Pastrnak from him was, you know, going to have him be disengaged, and I was pleasantly surprised that he seemed like he played a strong game last night. But going forward, I am still a little bit concerned. You know, quite frankly, the reason why the Bruins were so strong, or one of the main reasons in the final half of the season, was because that second line was so dominant. And you know, I was pleased to see that Cassidy was juggling things around, and I think giving Carolina different looks. But I'm curious what you guys think the trajectory of the series will look like in terms of how Cassidy utilizes the lines, because I don't think it's sustainable. You know, when we go back to Carolina, if that stall line is shutting down Pastrnak, Marchand, and Bergeron, I'd be concerned as to whether or not we can score enough down there.
It's an interesting point.
But it's the home ice advantage. I mean, and then how much do you get, you know, trying to match lines and match who's out there against who. I mean, that's part of the chess match, right? I mean, that's, you know, you can get away from, you know, the Bergeron stall matchup on an icing call or something like that. You get Bergeron's line out there. There's different things you can do. But, you know, do you want to get caught in a thing where, okay, the puck drops and Bergeron's line make a beeline for the bench because Stahl's out there? I don't know if you want to go that far. I mean, there are coaches certainly in the past that have done that. I don't see as much of it anymore. I think you try to live with some of the matchups and take advantage when you can. But you also try to have the right defense pairs out there, and you have confidence in your other lines as well. So, yeah, that's. I mean, like I said, 19 faceoffs against Stahl in Game 1, 4 last night. So, yeah, home ice advantage, right? I think there was 11 or 12 in Game 2, so a little bit less than that number. But you were chasing the game from the first period, though, in that one, too.
Well, what's Bruce Cassidy's favorite line? We can always go back. We can always change it back. So it wouldn't surprise me to see him make that kind of change. I think that's one of the things that Cassidy does well, his ability to make changes and adjustments in flight to see who's going, what's working, what do you need, a matchup you need to either get or stay away from. The other thing we really haven't talked about here this morning is Craig Smith. As that game wore on, it seemed like he started to drop a little bit lower and lower forward lines.
And some of it, he unfortunately wasn't able to get that puck out on the second goal. I think he sat a shift after that.
He only played just over 11 minutes. This is a guy... How do the Bruins, you know, get him to do it? This is a guy who's had a hard time finding the back of the net for more than a month now. You know, we know he's a streaky scorer. If they could somehow find a way to get him going, that'll be big, because as you look ahead to Game 5, and we haven't even, you know, played Game 4 yet, you're going to need other guys to be able to chip in. He's one of them.
All right, we will continue here in the final half hour of this week's Shaws and Star Market Hockey Show. Billy Jaffe will join us, and we'll talk about some of the other series going on around the league coming up next.
Playoff time in the NBA and NHL. Baseball's in full swing, and FanDuel is your place to bet on every game. Right now, new customers get $150 in bonus bets guaranteed. That's $150, win or lose. Bet on everything from slap shots to home runs to slam dunks on an app that's safe, secure, and easy to use. What are you waiting for? Visit FanDuel.com/Fred and make your first bet an automatic win. FanDuel, America's number one sports book.
21 plus and present in Massachusetts. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Hope is here. Gambling helpline, ma.org, or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support. Play it smart from the start. GameSenseMA.com or call 1-800-GAM-1234.
To the Shaws and Star Market Hockey Show, Boston's home for sports. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
All right, back here on the Shaws and Star Market Hockey Show. Ryan Johnston, Judd Surratt, Bob Beers here with you as we take you up to 11 o'clock. And each week at this time, we welcome in our friend Billy Jaffe from NESN and NHL Network. He joins us on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. Good morning, Billy.
Good morning, guys. How you doing?
Well, a lot better after last night's game than I was after the first two.
Yes, I agree. Much better.
Just before we get to other series around the league, you know, just give a quick overall thoughts on this series so far. How much better should we feel after game three? And, you know, can the Bruins sustain that effort and that success for the remainder of this series against a good Carolina team?
Going to be tough. Can they do it? Yeah, I mean, if they do some of the little things that you guys were all talking about for the last hour and a half or hour and 20 minutes, whatever it's been, they can. It's obvious, so you can't play certain ways against Carolina to be effective. I agree that they've been opportunistic. We know that the Bruins have had good starts. The problem is the good starts in two games in Carolina haven't resulted into good scores. It's funny, I don't know if Judd and Bob, you guys agree, and you two, RJ, it's like, I didn't feel like the Bruins had to worry about getting to the front of the net so much in this game, because they were obviously power plays, two of them, they were around there, but it had a different vibe to it, and so much so that it just had a different look to it from our eyes, and the game had a different look to it, but, you know, they were so concerned about net front getting there and protection in games one and two. Maybe they just did a better job of it in game three overall. But I think Carolina is going to come with a better effort. I think that there's some things that you can attack on them that the Bruins can do a little bit better. But it's going to be tough, man. This is a deep team in Carolina, and they're big. They're very big and long.
Who steps in for Jordan Martinook?
Don't you think it's Lorenz? Stepan, would they move then one of the I guess they could move Sepp to center and move Kotkaniemi to left wing, or that's probably it. I mean, he's a veteran. They know that they can have him come in and out. He's been a great soldier for them this year. Maybe that's what they would do and move Kotkaniemi to a wing.
Well,
that didn't look good. That didn't look good at all for Martin. Look, I know he didn't come back. I'm guessing it was his knee when he twisted back.
Yeah, I thought it might be his ankle. Either way.
Well, Rod Brindamore said
you're not
going to
find out. So,
yeah.
No, it's something player. Lower body, right?
Yeah, and I agree. I think it was Judd earlier that said I think that Piotr gets the start again tomorrow. I would think. I think they do want to go with him. He just has more presence. He's got a lot of swagger to his game. He did get exploited a bit short side a couple times last night. But the kid's got a ton of confidence and a lot more confidence than what you see out of Antti Raanta. I mean, Beersy, your point about not coming back. We talked about that on Morning Brew a little bit too, about, you know, I asked Razor about that. Like, why wouldn't he come back? Razor thought maybe because being a goalie, if you're bleeding more, you know, like a player, you know, when you can go back to the bench back and forth, you can get gauzed up, et cetera. And as a goalie, you couldn't. I don't know. I just think he's got a low pain threshold or lower tolerance for it.
Well, speaking of goalies, if the Bruins were to advance out of this round, next up is either the Rangers or the Penguins, and that goalie in that series, they were already down to DeSmith to start the series. He leaves during the triple overtime game, and now they're down to Louis Domingue because DeSmith is done for the year. And there's really no sign of when Jari's going to be ready.
He's
right?
on the ice.
Is he back on the
He's
ice?
He's on the ice.
He's on the ice. I don't know what that means as far as playing. On the ice could still mean 3 weeks away, but I don't know. Sullivan, I read, was it 2 days ago, just said he's out there skating but didn't give an update on it. Regardless, it won't matter if he can't get back into this round, which doesn't feel like he'll be able to, and Domingue is going to have to perform above his – what do they call it now? Expected goals allowed? I don't understand all that stuff, but he's going to have to be better. He's a guy who has been able to cobble together a decent backup career. He's been up and down and all around, and he's had some good and bad. But anyways, you know, look, Louis Domingue is going to have to carry it for them. How much does that change the mindset from the Pittsburgh Penguins? Do they play more cautious? He was good in game one when he came in, obviously overtime or double overtime. They ended up winning it in triple overtime. But, you know, game two is a different story. The Rangers seem to find their legs a bit more.
All right. So the other side of the East, Toronto takes a 2-1 lead over the Lightning last night. What have you thought of that series so far as it continues to develop? I mean, it feels like this is a 7-game series coming, right?
I don't know. It feels like it. And then you see the Lightning get, you know, kind of given the business for a couple of games. I know that Lightning came back a bit in the third, and obviously I didn't get to watch these games from last night, considering we had our own game.
One series we haven't watched any of, really.
Yeah. I mean, this Lightning game, a team, guys are, they continue to be kind of Jekyll and Hyde-ish, a little more than I remember from the previous 2 years. Now, my memory isn't always the greatest, but you know, they give up early goals. Riley scores a goal about 4 or 5 minutes in, and then they're down 2-0. I think it was under 10 minutes into the game. They get Vasilevsky moving, some traffic. They beat him that way. There was a good contingent, by the way, of Toronto fans down there. You could see them celebrating hard when their team was scoring. So I'm sure that was nice for the Maple Leafs down there to see their fans down there. Overall, listen, I think that there's been an awful lot of kind of massage going on by the Tampa Bay Lightning coaching staff about trying to find ways to keep getting that high level compete out of their teams, the focus out of their team that they need. Maybe that's just a result, fellas, of all the hockey they've played over the last couple of years. Game two, Vasilevsky was awesome. Game three, they find a couple ways to beat him. And then, yes, the team came back in the end, and it was two empty net goals, I think, by Mikhaev. They made the difference, but when it's all said and done, it was too little too late.
And the other series there, Florida and Washington, Florida kind of stumbles out of the gate. They come back, they get a 5-1 win. What do you expect as that series continues to develop and they move back to Washington? You know, does Florida continue that success that they had in game two?
Well, what are you going to get out? What are you going to get out of the D and the goaltending of the Capitals? Again, it was two different games from what I've been able to see, fellas, where for the Caps, a real stout defensive effort in game one. Maybe the Panthers a little guilty of being a little too aggressive in game one. And then, you know, they got beat by, you know, veterans and the Caps. And then game two, the Panthers found their game. Boy, the Panthers moved the puck up the ice quickly in game two. You know, now we saw the Caps play two goalies. I mean, I think the Panthers are a better team. I don't know, Beersy and Judd, what you guys think. I think overall, not just because of the regular season points, I just think they're constructed better. And I think that, you know, when they get their depth going, we saw Marchment, for instance, score a nice goal. And then Ekblad got involved early on. I think they're the better team. I think their biggest question is Bobrovsky and then their structure against a team that plays more structure.
Well, they'll need Bobrovsky to be good because they do give up chances, right? Because they want to go all the time. I mean, that's if there's a weakness to Florida, I think that's it. But they'll try to outscore some of their mistakes. And offensively, they're deep. And I don't trust Washington's goaltending. I mean, at all. So
who's going to start here?
There's a lot of rumors that they were in the market for a goaltender at the deadline, and it just didn't happen, but a good one. And so I think they identified that as one of their weaknesses. They're without Tom Wilson as well. I don't think he played game two, so I don't know what his status is, and you know what a difference maker he can be in so many different areas. So good and bad, but mostly good. And I don't have a trust in Washington's goalie.
Yeah, I haven't seen any update on Tom Wilson, but the other thing, though, Billy, because you know the style that Florida plays, if Washington is on its game, Peter Laviolette and the way he likes to play in that neutral zone, that 1-3-1, where they can generate some turnovers, that can help them if they're able to play some sort of a structured game and be able to generate some chances. But, you know, let's face it, in net and on the back end, you know, this was a team that really didn't add to its back end before the trade deadline. And, you know, John Carlson took a big hit early in the series. You know, I wonder how compromised they are.
You know, they might be. I mean, you could say that obviously about a lot of teams, but I think that with Tom Wilson is the big loss for them. He helps give them a whole different element, and he didn't play that much in game one before didn't he score?
He had to leave the game.
Yeah. And it's a lower body. They said that he was a game time decision. We all know that everybody's lying come playoff time, or fibbing. Maybe that's a nicer way to say that. But I don't know. I mean, I think when it's all said and done, the depth of Florida, RJ, to get back to your original question, how sustained, I think the depth of Florida will win out over the Washington Capitals squad.
By the way, quick update, Ilya Samsonov is going to get the start in game three.
And that's he came in game two. Neither of them are great. It's all said and done.
More goalie problems out west. Saros still out, is going to miss game three for the Preds as they get home ice against the Avalanche now, down 2-0. Colorado scored 7 goals in the first game. I mean, that was just an absolute drubbing. Second game goes to overtime, but the Avalanche win that. Is there any
that
way
that Connor Ingram played great.
Yeah, I mean, that might be the one game where he plays really great. I mean, I don't know his game, you know, having really watched him much, but you know, he's 25. He's a little bit older coming in, and they have to play him over big save Dave Riddick. I mean, they have to. Dave Riddick has just not had – he hasn't played much this year. The backup goalie who used to be in Calgary, but he came in to be UC Saros' backup this season, and David Riddick has just didn't play much because Saros played like 67 games, I think, if I remember correctly. But Connor Ingram played real well. I mean, he faced – 51 shots in that game that Cale Makar won in overtime. I don't know. I mean, this would be one of those games or one of those series where if it goes more than 5, RJ, I'd be surprised.
Yeah. You had to think that going into that series, and there's been nothing in the first couple of games that has proven otherwise.
But that's another team at the trade deadline. We were just talking about Washington being in the market for a goaltender. The Predators had no confidence in Big Save Dave. So how did David Poile not somehow address that with a team that can certainly do some damage?
I don't know, especially with how hard the team plays, right, Judd?
Yeah.
You know, with how they, you know, John Hines got them to put it on the line to play, quote unquote, playoff style hockey for a lot of the regular season. So I don't disagree.
They overplayed Saros during the regular season.
I know.
Why did you play him? He's not even that big of a guy.
They wore him down. He's one of the few goalies in this league that is still 6 foot or below. He is not. He had a hell of a year, a hell of a season for them too. But I don't disagree with you because we know that starting goaltenders for most of the league, you're one injury away from being a mediocre team for a lot of teams. But you know, the ask for his team was to play a certain style, and I agree that they didn't go out and help the team out once they got to that certain style, meaning the playoffs.
Let's finish up on Edmonton and LA. Edmonton put up not 8 goals last night. They had a 6-0 win in game two. And not only are they getting the goal scoring, but after struggling in game one, Mike Smith has looked a hell of a lot better in the last couple of games.
He has. I mean, you know, this was another series that thought 5, I mean, maybe 6 if LA really got something going. I think you're seeing some of the youthful mistakes. You know, LA's got a few great vets, the Kopitars, et cetera. Doughty's still not playing. They got a lot of young players, ORJ, guys in certain areas. And Edmonton in game one had a little trouble with the structure of LA, but be able to keep it up for, you know, LA's had a few good games this year against Edmonton, 2 or 3 where they're neutrals on Judd. You brought up a 1-3-1 of the Caps. LA does the same thing under Todd McClellan. But now you're seeing the Edmonton Oilers get to their game. I just think this is, you know, I know it's a 2-3 matchup, but when it's all said and done, this is like house money for the LA Kings getting to the playoffs. Edmonton is the better team. I know we didn't know what they were going to get regularly from Smith, although he was very good down the stretch. I still think, you know, Edmonton is much better than LA. You saw Kane have a hat trick. He scored a goal late. I think it was the 7th or 8th goal for them last night. McDavid had a goal. They were up 2-0 in the first few minutes. Zach Hyman scoring a couple of goals for this team. This is another, like I said, 5, maybe 6 game series at most when it's all said and done. I think the injury to Doughty is just, you know, catching up to the Kings and all the youth that they're playing on the back end.
Billy, I always appreciate it, and we'll look forward to seeing you. What, you on in the morning tomorrow, right?
11, oh, we are.
11:30 a.m. You got to be a good boy today.
Yeah, I'm old. That's not that hard anymore. I have yard work to do, more than easy. Yeah, bright and early tomorrow for everybody. All good, though.
Absolutely. Thanks, Billy.
All right, happy early Mother's Day to everybody out there. All right, see you later.
Billy Jaffe joining us on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. Of course, you can hear the game here on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Judd and Bob tomorrow with a noon pregame, 12:30 face-off-ish over at TD Garden. We'll talk to you guys next Saturday.
You got it. Have a great day.
All right. We'll talk to you next Saturday as well. Stick around for Gasper and Murray coming up next.
It's playoff time in the NBA and NHL. Baseball's in full swing, and FanDuel is your place to bet on every single game. Right now, new customers get $150 in bonus bets guaranteed. It's guaranteed. That's $150, win or lose. Bet on everything from slap shots to home runs to slam dunks, all on an app that's safe, secure, and easy to use. What are you waiting for? Visit FanDuel.com/Stewart and make your first bet an automatic win. FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook.
21 plus and present in Massachusetts. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Hope is here. Gambling helpline ma.org or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support. Play it smart from the start. GameSenseMA.com or call 1-800-GAM-1234.